You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The world outside your window may not be great, but don't worry, you're just in a slump, Superman. Everything is Superman here on Post Show Recaps, talking about the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. We are up to Superman 3. I'm Josh Wigler. I'm joined here by Kevin Mahadeo, who is the perfect person to start this podcast off by saying, "What did I just watch, Kevin? What was that?
What a change of pace. Okay.
What just happened? What is that? What did I just watch this movie?
Here's the big thing, though, right?
What was it?
Last time
Superman
3 we recorded, I said, I think you're going to enjoy watching it. I didn't say I think it's going to be good. I said, I think you might enjoy this.
What just happened? What did I just see? So remember when last time, Kevin, I was like, I'm not sure I've ever seen Superman 3. I think I've seen bits of... I've definitely never seen Superman 3 before.
This is a first experience. What a wonderful moment.
There's literally no way that I've ever seen Superman 3, because I wouldn't have been like on bed rest right now for some medical issue, going absolutely nuts in bed watching this movie this morning, being like, what? What is that? The computer ate the lady. What is that? What's yes. Richard Pryor doing? What is he doing?
What is Richard Pryor doing?
Yeah, full stop. You know, not even in this movie, but like, what's he doing during the movie? What's he doing in the movie? As in literally, what is he doing right now? I'm totally fine with Richard Pryor being in the movie, but what's happening? Why is he on skis? Why is he skiing off the building and it's totally fine? How does he know how to do all these crazy computer things? What is his deal? Also, his name is Gus, which is the name of Kevin's dog, and I can't separate the two things anymore.
Well, my first note, I'll have you know, right? Because this movie does start off with like him in the in an unemployment area, and he's basically like setting up, like, it seems like he's a grifter, right? And I wrote down, this movie starts with Richard Pryor, Gus Gorman, who is a grifter, like all Gus's, as
yeah,
I know.
It's true.
Because my dog Gus is quite the grifter.
So I know I've never seen this movie before, because the only thing that I could there were like two images that I could immediately recall with when it came to Superman 3 heading into it. One is like drunk Superman taking the shots, because yes, that's a great gif. And the other was Superman flying through the canyons with Richard mm-hmm. Pryor in his arms, which I felt like would be like, I think my association with it was like, this was like kind of like a buddy movie where it'd be like Superman Richard Pryor were buddies and they were like working together. I mean, that's certainly the story that Gus Gorman's going to tell at the end of the movie, where he's like, yeah, you know, me and Superman, we're tight. We're always flying together. But it's clear that I just know the poster, because that's the poster.
It's the poster. The poster is him carrying a Richard Pryor, who looks freaked out in his arms as Superman is smiling, flying towards the audience. That's the poster.
I definitely did not know that he was like, he's the bad guy of the movie, basically. Like, he's an antagonist at the very least.
An antagonist. Like, holy crap. We've talked about like other movies like Spider-Man 3 where there's too many villains. This movie has so many villains, and it's a new villain every 30 minutes. Every 30 minutes, they're like, oh, you think it's Gus Gorman? No, it is actually these rich people. You think it's these rich people? No, it is evil Superman. You think it's evil Superman? No, it is a computer. It's like every 30 minutes, a new villain shows up. It's crazy.
This movie is utterly insane. It's once again directed by Richard Lester. So this is what Richard Lester does when left to his own devices, I guess. When he gets to like start the movie from the ground up all on his own, Richard Lester makes Superman 3. Oh my God. I have no choice but to stan, Kevin.
I mean,
this movie is absurd and ridiculous and obviously not even in the same, you cannot speak of this film in the same quality category as the two previous ones, but I would be bold-faced lying if I said I did not very much enjoy myself watching this film.
Knew it.
Oh, God,
I
had so much fun. It was so stupid. Absolutely ridiculous.
And I will say this, like, afterwards, you know, we watched this movie. And throughout the entire thing, we kept saying comments, pausing, being like, what is happening? And then afterwards, being like, is this a good movie? No. Was it entertaining and stupid? Yes. And I think that's where this movie is. And it is, I'm glad I knew I nailed it. But I hated is a strong word. I didn't like this movie as a kid, right? And I definitely had weird feelings for Superman 4, which we'll get into when we talk about that. But
can't
as
wait.
An adult, it's as you said, you cannot compare this to the first two films. And if you remove it from the first two films as its own thing, it's, again, it's bad, but it's entertaining. The best way to describe this is very, very, very Silver Age. Like, the goofiness and silliness in parts is kind of like spot on to some of that Silver Age mentality. Some of the stuff he does, like the scene we'll get to where he ices the lake and just picks it up and carries it. Very Silver Age.
Which,
very much out of there.
I'll note, because I've been bit by the Superman bug, I've gone back and I've watched the episodes of Superman and Lois, the CW show, that have been released thus far, except for the latest one. No spoilers, don't tell
yes.
me. And in this is the mildest of spoilers, in the very first episode, one of like the first heroic acts of Superman, and sort of like the Superman is doing Superman things montage, is there's like a power plant that's like gonna go crazy, and he flies out into the ocean, and then emerges with what looks like a little ice cube, and then like you get the perspective shot, and he's got like this giant ice boulder, and he basically does the same thing. The very
yep.
first episode of Superman and Lois does an homage to Superman 3.
Yep.
Which I didn't know until I watched Superman 3 today. I was like, I was Leo. I was DiCaprio. I was pointing at the screen. I was like, that's the thing. They did that. Superman 3 is a beautiful thing to pay homage to. I'm glad they did it.
I'm glad they give the nod, right? And so there's a lot in this movie that to talk about, to break down, to kind of give some background now. And the easy way to do it is to start, right? Because
well, before we do, let's get some business out of the way, Kevin.
Ooh.
Yeah, let's do some notes. We'll get the business. You know, we gotta get some information out there, and then we will get into the podcast. I want to do it sequentially for sure. So first line item is this Superman 3. We said we're doing the Christopher Reeve Superman movies next week. It's Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. It's going to be the last one in our Superman miniseries. May not be the end of our Superman coverage. In fact, it definitely won't be in terms of everything is super all told. But after Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, we are going to be segueing into our coverage, previewing Loki, which is coming to Disney Plus, the next Marvel Cinematic Universe show coming to Disney Plus on June 9th is when that show debuts. So next week, Kevin and I are actually going to have two episodes of Everything is Super. We are going to have the Superman 4 podcast coming your way on May 31st, and then we will have our Loki preview show dropping on June 4th. To just like move us to Fridays. That's where we're going to be for the Loki show. We'll have our preview show dropping June 4th, and then we will have our recap of the first episode dropping on June 11th, just 2 days after Loki arrives on Disney Plus. So want to get that information out of the way up front. Start preparing, get your schedules ready. If you're like, oh man, I'm getting both Down the Hatch and Everything is Super on Fridays, it's just too much awesome for me to handle. My Fridays aren't going to be able to take it anymore. Well, there is a fix for that. We do release episodes of Down the Hatch, our Lost podcast, a couple days early for the patrons of Post Show Recaps. If you want to get early access to that podcast, move your listening ritual to Wednesdays, you can do that. Patreon.com/Post Show Recaps at the $5 level to get our exclusive patron podcast feed. Another reason you may want to consider signing up is as you are listening to these words, you could go to the Post Show Recaps patron feed and get an early exclusive look at the new 24 podcast that we're doing on Post Show Recaps. It's called Worst Day Ever, and we've got the preview show and the recap of the first episode available exclusively early for the patrons of Post Show Recap. So if you're excited about that podcast, you want to get in your ears early before we drop that podcast starting in June, you can do it right now. Patreon.com/Post Show Recaps. And Kevin, one more thing. You ready?
I don't know.
You ready for this one more thing? Gotta take a quick minute to thank our sponsors for this episode of Post Show Recaps. Those are our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Kevin, it's a lot of information. How are you feeling about all of that information?
I'm feeling pretty good about the information, especially because, you know, the reason that Worst Day Ever exists, the reason that 24 podcasts exist is, of course, because of our patron listeners, which I want to give a thanks to because we wanted to hit 500 before the end of the month in order to get that patron exclusive podcast. And you guys delivered.
You did it.
You delivered. So thank you so much for that. Thank you for the support.
You
and thank
flew
you for making
out
this happen.
Into the lake. You used your frost breath. And you turned that lake into an ice cube, a giant one, in fact. And you dropped it all over a smoldering fire in Smallville that was able to put that fire out. You are the true Superman.
He made it rain. They made it rain is what they did. Our patrons made it rain.
You made it rain. You know, another reason, just because I don't shout it out enough to sign up for the Post Show Recaps patron feed, it's just $5 a month. And if you do that, you get a weekly show hosted by Kevin Mahadeo. Right now, it's Mighty Ducks, which you are co-anchoring with Melissa Woodward and an incredible array of rotating guests. I know R. Philly, the great Rich Filiberto, was on with you this past week. I have an inkling of a future guest, I think, who may be coming up in the not too distant future. And it's a really great podcast that people are loving. And I believe you've got plans beyond Ducks that are not quite ready to be announced right now.
Not quite ready to be announced, but yes, stuff is in the works. I've had such a blast doing the podcast with Melissa. She's such a great co-host, especially as we banter about Canada, as she is Canadian, and hockey obviously has a direct connection there. We play games on that podcast to highlight the fact that I know nothing about sports, which is a blast and wonderfully embarrassing. And there are plans to continue with something else afterwards because we've had such a good time with the Ducks podcast as we're wrapping up that coverage. There will be something in the future, but we will keep it under wraps for now. But the patrons, you guys can check that out on the patron feed, the Mighty Ducks Game Changers podcast.
And it's what you have planned is ridiculous because I am aware of what you've got planned next. And it's like, if you love Kevin, which I assume you do because you listen to this podcast, then you certainly want to be checking out the Ducks coverage. But I think you really are going to be interested in what he's doing next. Even if like the subject matter isn't your thing, I think Kevin on the subject matter will be your shit. I think you can get in on the ground floor now or you can wait a little while. But pretty soon, I think you're going to want to hear Kevin's podcast that he's going to be doing exclusively for the patrons of Post Show Recap. It's going to be really, really, really fun.
It's going to be great.
all right. That's a lot. Let's talk Superman 3, which is also so much. It is a lot.
So much.
Oh, my
so
God,
much.
Kevin. What?
I mean, let's...
I feel like, you know, I'm super sober, and I feel like I just tripped on so many different substances watching this film.
Like, it is such a change of pace because...
Oh, my God. It's weird.
Let's, like, even, like, we just touched on the beginning, and, like, it's already weird, like, you can tell, like, they're like, we have Richard Pryor, he has to be a focus of this film, you know? And
what's the backstory there? Like, you know, Richard Pryor, kind of, like, height of his powers type deal right now, is it just like, let's get some, like, Richard Pryor, Viagra, and Superman?
Well, as I understand it, and again, this is, you know, I'm not an expert on this particular subject, and there's much discussion about it, but if I actually understand correctly, Richard Pryor is a fan of Superman and wanted to be in the movie.
Got it.
Which is which is wild. But like the idea, I mean, also, you know, at this time, Richard Pryor, like you said, height of his career. So even if Richard Pryor is a fan of Superman and wants to be in this movie, if you are the studio, if you are the producers,
you say yes. Who,
as we are going to be seeing what happens here with these producers and what they have created, you're going to say yes. And you're going to be like, well, he's got to be the focus, right? This is such a weird movie because so much of the movie focuses not on Superman. More than the other two movies, Superman is not on screen as much in this movie. I'm not even talking about Superman versus Clark Kent. I mean, Chris Reeve. They focus a lot on the other stuff going on with Gus and the villains, who's, I'm just going to call him Richie Riches, because, like, you know, their names are barely important into the main plot.
Ross Webster.
Yes, the Websters, Vera Webster, and then his
what did they call Ross? Bub? Is that what she calls him?
Bubba, I believe.
Bubba!
Yeah.
My God.
I don't like any of it. I don't like any of that. It's very weird with them.
Oh, it's so strange.
Yeah, and the girl that does the baby voice but is actually really smart, like, the baby voice I could not deal with.
Oh, you mean the person that Superman one night stands?
Right?
Oh my
God. And then it's just like,
that wasn't me.
Yeah, it wasn't. I don't know you, lady.
She's like, great, I'll be forever traumatized and will probably become a supervillain as a result, and you will have no one to blame but yourself.
Right. It's, oh boy. Okay. So this movie starts Richard Pryor, right? As we mentioned, he's unemployed. He's a bit of a grifter, it feels like. And he gets this lighter slash matches that says, like, learn, you know, computers now, become a computer programmer. Because at the time in this period, computers, people are obsessed with them and what they could do because they're the future. And we're living in the future now. And I will tell you, computers can't do that. The things that computers could do, no.
No, we're still working on it. Kevin and I actually do have a blueprint in development that's going to be a supercomputer that can combat all of your weaknesses. It's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, we also have one that can control the weather
somehow.
What
do you think the Patreon is for, folks? We're shoring up the funds for our supercomputer. Yeah.
Yeah, we're calling it, I can't think of an acronym to get to Brainiac, but I was going to make a Brainiac joke. But anyway.
Nice. Yeah.
But this is beyond that. How this movie starts, to me, says everything about what this movie is.
Instantly, because you know this movie is going to be insane.
Insane. Because, it even starts off with the, like, Alex Salkin presents, who's the producer, right? And as we talked on the previous podcast, the producers, the Salkins, they butted head with Donner. They wanted it to be goofy and silly, like, you know, like this, basically. And so Donner was fired. Superman 2, half of it became kind of weird because they had to reshoot with Richard Lester. So with Donner gone, with the guy who was focusing on making Superman kind of serious gone, they tell us right away, this is what we wanted Superman to be. This is what we have been envisioning from the start. And it's insane. It is this, like, weird opening sequence of slapstick comedy that is just so ridiculous. Like, the girl walks by and she's wearing a low-cut top, so it distracts a guy who walks into a pole, who knocks over a thing, who releases some penguins out into the world.
They're set on fire. Distracts
a blind man. They're on fire.
Yeah.
Jimmy Olsen is there. And this, like, robbery is occurring at the same time. Just nonstop slapstick wildness that is so insane. Like, it's crazy that all of this is happening, and it just blows my mind. What's even worse to me, by the way, Superman does show up and, like, saves the guy from the car, which is flooding somehow. I don't know how that car, like, he ran over a fire hydrant and that causes the car to flood somehow.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Jimmy, It's weird. And Jimmy Olsen is there. Jimmy Olsen, who in Superman 2, as Ursa, Zod, and Nan are smashing through the Daily Planet, Jimmy Olsen is there snapping picture, doing his job as these horrifying people come to do Lord knows what to them. And he's still doing his job.
Yeah.
For whatever reason in this movie and in this opening sequence, Superman saving the day and Jimmy's just like, I'm going to eat this hot dog. I'm not taking any pictures. It's a small note, but boy, I hate it. I hate it that they make Jimmy Olsen bad at his job all of a sudden.
Well, he just, you know, he's in a slump. Isn't that what the kid says to Superman? You're just a slump, Superman. You'll be back. It's just a slump.
You'll be bad. It's me, Ricky. It's Ricky so small, that kid.
Yeah, it's a slump, Jimmy. You're just in a slump, Jim. You'll be back, Jimmy. And he will, right? You know, it's just to get him to Smallville and then to, I guess, get him out of the way again.
Yeah, plot device. He's bad at his job for a moment. But, like, this opening sequence, like, for sure sets the tone of this film, right? Like, it's just going to be ridiculous and silly and goofy. There's one part I do like in this opening sequence.
I like all the parts.
Okay, well, there's one part that I actually think is clever and I thought was, like, legit, like, not just slapstick stupid. But I was like, oh, I like that. Is where Superman goes into the photo booth to change. And then he comes out because the photo booth took the pictures and the kid's there and he just rips the bottom one to give to the kid where he's Superman and keeps the rest of it and flies off. I thought that was very cute. I thought that was very Superman-esque. I thought that was very fun. So I did really like that small bit. And I don't know if you remember, Josh, but we actually talked about something in the first Superman movie. Do you remember?
I mean, we talked about a lot of things.
We did. First one. But we actually talked about this scene. We didn't know we were talking about the scene. At least you didn't, but I did. Because we looked up the little baby that played Superman and what else that baby has been in.
Correct.
And he was Kid at the photo booth, meaning the kid that Superman gives that last picture to is his baby self from the first movie, which I think is really fun.
Look, considering what happens in this film, I wouldn't have been surprised if they had tried to, like, have some sort of time travel explanation. It certainly wouldn't have been the first time they did time travel in the Christopher Reeve Superman movies.
That's very fair. That's very fair. I mean, there are Silver Age stories where Superman, Superboy, and Super Baby are all hanging out. So,
could have been. What could have been? What could have been?
And there's actually some interesting what could have been we'll talk about at the end of this, because there are some interesting facts about that. But that's how this movie starts.
It is. It is, Kevin. And, you know, Superman 1, Superman 2 also had, like, major, like, tone setter openings. You know, Superman 1 is, you know, all of, like, the Krypton stuff. And that really sets a tone for the movie and like, kind of, like, fills you in on sort of what to expect. And I think really appropriately measures up. If anything, I think the opening, as I've said, like, I feel very strongly about it. And I feel like it sets up an epic scale that, like, you can't quite measure up against. I just love the Krypton stuff so much. That's a personal preference. Superman 2 begins with the previously on, but that's important because it's setting up, you know, how much that first movie informs the second one. And I know the Donner Cut opens differently, and that sets a tone based on everything you described about the Donner Cut. And all of that is just, like, fully doing its job. You can call this opening absolutely batshit ridiculous for Superman 3, but it also very appropriately sets the tone for the rest of the film.
Like, it sets the tone so well.
It's not deceiving you. It's not lying to you. It's not selling you something that it's not going to deliver on. It is going to deliver on exactly what it is telling you it is at the very start of the film. So if only on that note, you got no choice but to respect it.
I do, you know, in that regard, yes, because it does set the tone for what this film is. And as mentioned, wild and crazy and psychotically ridiculous. Psychotically ridiculous is probably the descriptor for this movie, because you have Superman being psychotically ridiculous in parts. You have the villains who are basically psychotically ridiculous. We're just going to get rid of all the oil. Why? What's your end goal on that one? Because
coffee.
They never specify.
Give me the
as
coffee.
I really, It's so insane. Like, none of it makes sense. And also not making sense, right? Like, even from this moment, we cut to what will become a theme, because we cut to Gus at his new computer programming job, right? And someone's just like, hey, well, if we can do this, why can't we do this? And the teacher is just like, well, that's impossible. And then Gus is just like, but I did that thing. Check it out. And he's like, how did you do that? And he's just like, I don't know. That's not how that works. That's like, it's not like you just can know how to program a computer through force of just, like, osmosis or something. Like, there are keys and, like directions you have to, like, specifically say. Like, they could have done it that Gus is, like, a savant And when that guy's just like, how'd you do this? He's like, well, I just used what you told me and said the code to do this. And then there we go. But instead, it's just like, I don't know. Magic. Which, Gus, I have a theory. Or Gus, Josh, I have a theory.
Yeah. I'll answer to Gus, though, if you want.
I have a theory. So this is the first note. And this came up during our watching here at home. What if Gus Gorman is actually Mr. Mixius Pitlick?
This is so interesting that you should say this. So first of all, that character whose name you have pronounced in a way that, like, I don't know how, Mr. Mitzelplick, who is a classic Superman villain. He's like a tiny little imp, this little nefarious, mischievous little guy.
He's a mischievous guy, fifth-dimensional imp.
Yeah, got a bowler cap. He's got the gray Doc Brown hair. He's like a tiny evil little Rick from Rick and Morty.
Basically. And he just does magic instead of science.
Yeah, Mr. Mitzelplick. Kevin, so interesting that you say that. I'm reading about the development of Superman 3. He was going to be one of the villains of this film.
That is correct.
That there was a version of this where Mr. Mitzelplick would have been a villain alongside Brainiac, who has yet to be featured in a live-action Superman movie, if I'm
or
not mistaken.
Has he been? Because that's the part I want to talk about at the end here, because they keep saying supercomputer, but that's very clearly Brainiac.
Mm.
They very clearly built Brainiac, and there's ways that they could have gotten there to, like, even have it be real Brainiac. But we'll touch on that, because there's a whole part at the end to talk about. But yes, there was a point where Mr. Mixius Plitlick, however you want to pronounce it, there's been various pronunciations and various forms of media, but he was originally going to be a villain. And when you look at the stuff Gus does, he could be Mr. Mixius Plitlick, right? Like, you could the reason he knows how to do this is because magic. He has made computers literally magic. Josh, there's a point where, because he's drunk and he's messing around with computers in Smallville, he causes the walking signals to move from one to the next and punch each other. That's not how that works at all. The red light go, green light stop, like, people on the walkings come into each other's thing and fight. That's not a thing computers can do, but it is a thing.
I'm convinced that this is Mr. Mitzelplick, Superman's magical nemesis. That's who Richard Pryor is actually playing. And it could be that he's like an amnesiac version of the character and doesn't, like, know the full extent of his powers yet, or that he's just like so expertly in deep cover that he is like fully pulling the wool over everybody's eyes. And is going to live to laugh another day by the end of this movie. But it totally, absolutely, and this is brilliant, Kevin. It just completely changes the way you watch this movie and makes this already terrific film so much better.
It really does. And I'm going to give credit where credit is due, because the theory came up from my fiance who said it. And I was just like, oh my God. And knowing so much about this movie, I was like, this actually can make a lot of sense, like, if you look at it with this lens. And as we watched it, we were just, like, more and more convinced, like, oh, yeah, I think this is a fun theory that actually somehow makes this movie a little bit better.
Yes, totally agreed. Completely.
And that's, like, this is the first instance, right? His magic ability, which we'll get to how that transfers later. But then we get to the Daily Planet. And, man, this is the part where, like, there are things, again, the goofiness is fun. But the little details really do rub me the wrong way, especially after seeing how good some of the other stuff was handled. The Daily Planet was such a, like, great, like, set piece. The characters were so awesome back in the first two films. Like I said, Jimmy Olsen, good at his job. They're calling Jimmy Olsen out as bad at his job because he's taking pictures of that woman instead of, like, the actual ceremony. And I'm like, Jimmy Olsen's a horn dog? Like, when did this come up? And even, like, the banter between Lois and Clark is not, there's banter, but it's all bad. What happened to the chemistry between Margot Kidder and Chris Reeve, right? Like,
they don't need to invest in it in this movie because she's not in the movie.
She's out. Yeah. I love, by the way, props to Margot Kidder. Just like, I'm gonna be here 5 minutes and I'm out. That's a wrap for Lois Lane, everyone.
In the credits, in the opening crazy scene, I was like, wait, I haven't seen Margot Kidder yet. Is she not in this movie? And I was getting incensed. And then it says, and Margot Kidder as Lois Lane. I'm like, oh, sweet. She got the prestigious and credit. Good for her. And then she pieces out to Bermuda. And then there's a part of me that's like, okay, so I guess Superman goes to Bermuda in this one? And then literally was like, I'll be in the movie for the first 5 minutes and then I'm out. I'll show up at the very end too to be jealous of Lana Lang, but that's it. Lois Lane's not in this one.
No. And it's crazy.
I'm so sad about it.
It is, because there's a lot of potential, but like, what does happen, you know, instead of Lois having Lana, I will say early on before we delve into it, I actually really like the stuff with Clark and Lana in this. But you do miss out the Lois stuff, and then they tease it at the end that you're gonna have, because there's a classic, right? The classic old school, again, Silver Age Superman stuff had Lana and Lois constantly at odds about Superman's affection and Superman's love. It was the constant battle between them for the love of Superman. So, like, this rivalry between them, this romantic rivalry, is like one of the classic comic book tropes, right? Like, this is huge in the realm of Superman. It's not great because, again, defining two women as just basically about their love of Superman is not ideal. And they've done a lot to, you know, come away from that in modern times. But this movie, I think, handles some of that stuff interestingly. Again, I will give credit where credit is due. But the Daily Planet stuff and the Lois stuff, like, sucks because she's not there. You get this, like, great character who has such great banter with Chris Reeve, and, like, she's off to Bermuda, and then we don't really see her again. It is unfortunate, to say the least.
Yeah. I don't know that I loved it, personally.
Yeah.
Although I guess Annette O'Toole, who plays Lana Lang, would go on to be Martha Kent on Smallville.
Smallville, that is so correct.
Obviously, very beloved figure within the Superman mythos.
Yes, and she is great. But before we even get to Smallville, there is the fun part. Because again, this movie cuts back to Gus Gorman so often.
He's the main character.
Because it's Richard Pryor. He's pretty much the main character. And actually, this part is, if anything has lasted, I think, from this movie, especially into the cultural context, it is what happens next. Because Gus is working for Webster's company and he's unhappy with his paycheck, right? So he uncovers the fact that, like, fractions of pennies are, like, you know, the computers keep track of them, but, like, none of the actual business stuff is in the books. So he creates a program to take those fractions of a pennies and deposit them into another account that belongs to him. So he's ripping off the company in a very, very clever way using his computer programming magic. And
he's
this
a computer science wizard.
He's a computer science wizard, a computer dimensional wizard. But this con should sound familiar to a lot of people. Does it sound familiar to you, Josh?
Go on.
This is a con that they use in Office Space. They specifically call it out in Office Space, where he, like, Ron Livingston's character is like, why does this sound familiar? And he's like, this is the same thing Richard Pryor did in Superman 3. And it's incredible, because, like, when they said in Office Space, the first time I watched it, I was like, that's Superman 3. And I like that they called it out. But they, what's great is that they run the same con and encounter the same problem where too much money was taken away and they immediately noticed, you know, like, that's exactly what happened with Gus, is that all the money that he got, like, they noticed it. The Websters noticed and were just like, where did all of our money go?
Yeah, and they find out who did it because he shows up in, like, a... Right. And like a Corvette or whatever, like he just like rolls into work one day after Big Boss Ross is like, whoever did this wouldn't be so stupid as to advertise himself. And then he just shows up in his sports car, just like rolling into the office, like, right. It's no big thing.
Like, it's no big deal. I do like that they were like, only an idiot would do this. But again, only an idiot or an all-powerful magical
magic
being
genius,
who knows that he won't encounter any troubles in the long run.
Yep.
I will say, too, right, like, this scene, I do love the Office Space con. I think it's great. I think it's really, really funny. I like how it blows up in his face in a way. And this is the moment we do get introduced, right? Like, as this investigation they are uncovering, we are introduced officially to the Websters. We've seen pictures of them, but this is their first introduction as characters, like talking to each other, setting them up. And I will say, as you talked about the intro of this movie setting the tone, right? Superman 2, I think, did a great job introducing the villains. We talked about that. We talked about House of Superman 2 introduced Zod, Ursa, and Nan on the moon and this like terrifying aspect to them. So they introduced them as to what they are, dangerous. And I do think this movie does a good job as well, introing these villains as exactly what they are, which is annoying. They are an annoying group of people. And so they accomplishes that goal. Like everything they do, I'm just like, Jesus Christ, you're the worst. Every single one of you.
Yeah. And like, you wonder why this isn't Gene Hackman. You wonder why this isn't Lex Luthor. Apparently he didn't want to do it. He was mad at the Salkins.
Yeah. Yeah, after Superman 2, like the, you know, after what they did and everything with Brando, Gene Hackman never came back and he wouldn't until other stuff, which we'll talk about soon. But yeah, it's also weird to have also like rich people as a villain again, you know, just like wealthy, clever-ish business people, like discount. Yeah,
superhero movie trope though, that like, they just kind of, you know, recycle through similar types of bad guys. Like we've talked about this extensively with like early MCU, even like frankly till like fairly late MCU as it currently stands, of just like rich, you know, billionaire white dude is the bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, I mean, there's good ways to do it, and this is not it. Because we get this situation where they find out what Gus is capable of. They find out he's a genius. They bring him up there. And then they ask him, because of all his knowledge with computers, because he's magic with computers, they have their own plan, right? They're like, oh, we have money invested in coffee, but our main competitor is Colombia, who has two main exports. One of them being coffee, and the other one is implied, and I find that slightly offensive, but
yes.
Fine.
Yes.
So they want Gus to essentially use this Vulcan satellite to make weather happen and cause the crops in Colombia, the coffee crops, to go bad using computers.
Yeah, and definitely not magic.
And definitely not magic. And in order to accomplish this, they end up sending him because they're just like, we need to go somewhere that can't be traced back to us. You just need access to a computer that can hook up, you know, to the satellite. So we're going to send you somewhere small.
Yeah. And so we know that there's only
Smallville.
There's only three places in the entire Superman movie universe that still exists because Krypton's been destroyed.
Right.
And that is Metropolis, Smallville, and Australia.
Australia. And they weren't going to send him to Australia because that's too big, as you know. So they send him to Smallville. Love that read. So Australia. Anyway, they end up sending him to Smallville, right? Which, coincidentally, is where Clark and Jimmy are headed. This is where we get this other part of the story.
Yeah, I didn't realize, Kevin, that this was the Superman Goes Back to Smallville movie. Especially like when the movie started and it was doing all the things it was doing. It's like, this was not on my radar. That like this was also going to be like, we've kind of seen Superman reckon with his Kryptonian past. This shall be the film that reckons. I mean, reckons is actually not an inappropriate word.
Smallville is wild and weird because, like, as we'll discuss, like, they bring the entire town out for little Ricky's birthday because
little
Superman's going to be there.
Ricky. Oh my God, this boy. Who just
this
apparently
boy.
Just, like, fell on a rock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, just poor little Ricky. What happened, buddy? I was just playing with a dog in the field and I slipped.
And I just slipped, hit my head on the rock.
On a rock. Poor little Ricky. What happened? Yep.
It's so funny because, like, you are right. Like, this movie, The Return to Smallville, I don't think was expected. But honestly, I don't hate a lot of the Smallville stuff because, like, they get on the bus. And for what it is, right, like, it's Clark and Jimmy on the way to Smallville is how we get this thing started, because Clark's going to do this like piece about his high school reunion, which seems psychotic as a newspaper piece for the Daily Planet, but whatever. And they're passing
let
by this chemical plant.
Let me continue pointing attention towards my backstory, right. Clark Kent. Let me publish this in a major newspaper.
Just
in case anyone else then goes and looks up what I look like as Clark Kent and then has any shred of intelligence and realizes that, hey, if I remove the glasses from this reporter, that's Superman.
Yeah, I look a lot like Superman.
That guy looks like Superman.
It's absurd. It's absurd on so many levels. But like this scene, right? Like the chemical plant scene is not bad. Like I think it's fun. I think some of it is ridiculous. Like there's a part at the very beginning, again, a nitpick, but I think is really absurd, where Jimmy goes with Clark and like pulls him down next to the police car and whispers how he needs a distraction because he wants to sneak in. And if you look at that scene, there's a cop literally right next to them who's like looking down at them. Crouching, quote unquote, hiding. He's staring dead at them as they're doing this, which I think is so wonderfully stupid. Like that edit that was missed where it's just like they're supposed to be hiding, but there's someone literally 2 feet away staring at them as they're trying to hide.
Incredible.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. But like the Superman sequence here is not bad, right? Like he comes in, there's clever ways he figures out how to save the people. Like they, you know, they're trapped up there. So he uses like the chimney, I don't know what to describe that as, but
he breaks off like a silo and turns it into a slide,
right, so they can get out safely. He knew that he couldn't use his super breath immediately to like rescue Jimmy. He had to walk into the fire, grab him, get him out, and then try to put out the fire, because you know if you use a super breath you would just blow it onto Jimmy and kill
him. Right.
So like, and then he uses the ice thing, which is extremely Silver Age and super dumb, but still not the dumbest thing in this movie.
Well, considering that it works, and I did want to talk about this, is I think like there is this reputation that Batman's the super genius and Superman's kind of an idiot in comparison. That like one of the things that Batman has with Superman is he's just like hyper intelligent. He's thought through every battle's possible conclusion, so he's over prepared and everything. But like, you know, if Superman's right and he can like freeze a huge chunk of lake and then drop the iceberg onto the thing and it melts and turns into rain and it puts out the fire, he's actually rather intelligent. This is a very smart guy.
Yeah, presuming in the magical world it would have worked,
I mean,
right?
It works
in here.
What a smart dude. He figured it out.
This would not have worked IRL. The problem is, of course, like when you drop something
that
big.
Don't you start that with me. This is a Kryptonian we're talking about, Kevin. That's not going to work IRL.
Okay, fine. Fair enough. Good argument. I do agree. Like that's been the thing, and I think that the portrayals of Superman as like an idiot is incorrect. Like he in the old Silver Age stuff, especially, he was extremely intelligent. He had super everything, including intelligence. Right. They just needed to obviously balance that out as the interactions between these characters moved on more. But I think Superman is supposed to be smart. I don't think he should be Batman level smart. As I've mentioned before, I think Superman is that's not his key, right? Like I don't think he needs to be the fastest, the strongest, the smartest. I think Superman's power is his ability to inspire and to persevere and to get back up when he's been knocked down. I think that's Superman's deal, to do the right thing. But here it does work, and sure, he must have known it would have worked, and he caused it to rain. But the one thing someone somewhere, I will say, for as insane as this movie is, someone somewhere must have read a book about story, because they do introduce a plot element in this sequence that will serve an extremely important part later in this movie during the climax.
Okay.
So we get Chekhov's acid, basically, because the scientist is like, I can't leave. This acid is harmless, but if it gets superheated, it becomes extremely dangerous, can eat through anything, and if it evaporates, it'll cause a cloud of acid dust that will just destroy everything.
Including potentially, I don't know, a supercomputer?
Indestructible supercomputer? Quite possibly. So I did like that. Someone read the book, right? Someone read a book on storytelling to know, introduce a plot element if you're going to use it
Chekhov's
later.
Chekhov's vat of acid.
Exactly. Chekhov's vat of acid.
Yeah.
And I love that. I do like that happened. But the rest of the Smallville stuff is like such a love-hate for me, dude. I can't even explain it. I think for the love, I love Annette O'Toole as Lana. I think she's great. I think she's so, good in this. I think she's doing such a great job, like, performance wise. I think she's doing such a great job, like, with this character. I love the idea of, like, she's in this small town. She never left. She has a kid, but, like, there's more to her. It isn't just her love of, like, she's obsessed with Superman or Clark. I like the idea that they are building the idea that she is interested in Clark and not Superman as a contrast, you know? I think that stuff is really great. I think everything she does is fantastic, except for when she calls when she's in Smallville and she calls Metropolis the Big Apricot. That made me angry. That made me really upset.
Yeah.
that upset me.
The Statue of Liberty is in Metropolis, though. So
apparently,
yeah, who knew? Amazing, absolutely incredible.
Yeah, New York just doesn't exist in this world.
Yeah.
But yeah, he goes to the reunion. He gets all the Lana stuff, and we also get introduced to Brad, which I should say reintroduced, because it's funny when rewatching the first movie, Brad is mentioned. And yeah. I think I mentioned to you, that name.
Is he not the guy that he's like who's being like an uber douche to young Clark?
Correct.
Yeah,
absolutely correct.
Yeah.
So I like that they brought him back, and he's still an uber douche.
There is some semblance of continuity and like forward momentum here in Superman 3, but I must stress. Some semblance. Yeah.
The barest amount.
Yes.
Because, like, for all the stuff that I think works, you get weird stuff. Like, for example, that bowling scene. What?
Superman just wanted to let little Ricky have a taste of victory.
Josh! How would everyone react?
He uses his super strength to, like, destroy the machine and then his breath to, like, push little Ricky's ball further down the bowling alley or the lane at the alley, I guess. And he does this to one-up. What's the guy's name again?
Brad.
He does this to one-up Brad, basically just be like, shut up, Brad. And he lets Ricky have, like, his superhero day in the sun at the bowling alley. And with his super breath to push the ball further down, he not only knocks down all the pins, he destroys many of them.
He obliterates them.
And no one's like, and no one like turns around and looks at Clark right. and goes, "You are Superman."
Right. Well, not even to Clark, because if anyone's perspective, you're Superman. It's like Ricky did that, it would have been like, "Yo, what is up with little Ricky?"
We need to turn little Ricky into the government for observation.
It's so insane that happened.
Young little Ricky may be some sort of metahuman.
Yes. He must have some sort of super strength.
Super strength, yeah.
Very clearly, they would have lost that theory because he falls on a rock and knocks himself out shortly thereafter.
If I fell on a rock like that, I probably would have been knocked out too. I don't want to, like, you know, rock shame this kid. but it is just amazing that, like, you know, later, like, because, like, Clark and Lana are getting close and they go for a picnic. And they're about to have a moment. And I guess I have to imagine that this is a couple of years after Superman 2. It certainly is in release. I have to imagine it is in continuity, because otherwise, like, the fact that Clark decided, like, he would erase Lois Lane's memories of him, he would move on because he's never going to be able to have a happy life like this, and then just instantly moves on to Lana Lang would be so offensive. I would throw
it would be upsetting.
But if it's been like a couple of years, like, you know, people change. It's still really messed up that he erased her memories. But, you know, people do change. Maybe he regrets that. I don't know. He should probably account for that in some capacity. But like he's doing that and they
spoiler, he doesn't
they go on a picnic and then like they're about to like make out and then like the like oh no the oil's leaking out of the car and like good for her. I would have no idea what she's talking about and she seems to know exactly what's going on. That's awesome. And Superman's like, here, let me help you out, and then he puts on his x-ray vision, or no, it's his sound, he hears like the dog barking.
Yes.
And there's little Ricky in the middle of the field unconscious because he's fallen upon a rock. He's knocked his head on a rock, and there are not one, not two, but three tractors headed directly for him that would grind him to mush. And so Superman's like, shit, Lana, you deal with the car. I gotta go check on the dog for some reason. And he goes and he flies. And let's remind everyone that this is a man who once changed the course of human history by rotating the earth, spinning it backwards in time to save Lois Lane. And yet he just barely gets there before the tractors, which are like
I don't know, like a quarter of a mile away from little Ricky by the time he sees that little Ricky is in danger, he just gets there on time. So this entire movie, just even performance-wise, Kevin, I gotta say, Superman a bit off his game. That's a pretty sluggish Superman right there.
For how far he had to travel, like you said, absolutely. It's ridiculous. Also, I do need to offer a correction because I made the same mistake and my Midwestern fiance correct me. Those aren't tractors. Those are technically called combines.
Okay.
So just for anyone yelling at us right now that those aren't tractors.
Yeah.
They're combines. Okay, we got it. Yes. But yeah, and like it's very actually this is like straight out of the X-Men comics because this is how Colossus first gets his powers, where his sister Ileana was in the field and like the combines were coming at her.
I feel like I saw that in the animated series.
Correct. Yes. That scene is 100% in the animated series. So like pulled directly from that moment. But yeah, it's Superman is not very super through most of this movie. There's moments where he does some really good stuff, but like most of this movie, it's not the dude we know because he takes a while to travel there. Like he does stop the combine, sure, with that like clearly 12-year-old driving it as well. And rescues Ricky, heads back, and then is just like, "Well, good to see you, gotta go," and then flies away because he has to transform back into Clark Kent. There's a lot of that in this one where it's very like. The Superman we get, we don't really get a lot of, and the one we do get is, of course, going to be, as we will see, the evil Superman. It's very odd choice stylistically, I think, and part of the problem of this film and the way it's paced and, I think, chopped up.
Yeah. But he's, I don't know, we're living in the age of Omni-Man, what's it, the Homelander?
Yep.
You know, and so to see, because again, I'd only seen the memes, but to see Christopher Reeve do evil Superman, this man had such range. He is genuinely hilarious.
So good.
He's genuinely like for like what the tone is. Again, I have to start like. The issue to take is with the tone of the film, because the tone, either you're going to be with it or you're not. And it's totally fair if you're not, especially after those first two movies. And like there's definitely like there's the other path. Maybe this series could have gone down, though. If you do read like the Wikipedia and you find out what Donner's ideas were for Superman 3, like they don't sound great to me personally. They sound a little weird. So like maybe this was not going to go great no matter what. So at least like we're going to get a weird version either way. So like if you're going to embrace the weirdness, then at least like you have to give some props to Christopher Reeve, who's able to really go with it. Like he's going to end up like, he's going to get like this raggedy, factory made kryptonite that doesn't kill him, but turns him into an asshole. Like that's the power. The power of the kryptonite is like it's going to turn him from Superman into super douche. And Christopher Reeve's like, all right, well, I guess I'm going for it. And he does. He just plays a jerk really, really, really remarkably well in ways that are like intentionally funny. Some ways that are like, oh my God, like what, you know, him and Lorelai, like that's so messed up. It's not all right.
You say Lorelai?
Yeah, isn't that the name of the person that he
ended? Oh, I sorry, coming off the Mighty Ducks podcast, I kept being like, Gilmore? What are you talking about?
No. Yeah. This is not a Gilmore Girls secret podcast. He just does such a great job with it.
He does, and you even see it, like, Christopher, he has such great range. And you even see it in that picnic scene, right? And really, in Smallville, his interactions with Lana are really good. When they sit for that picnic, and he's doing the, like, oh, pate, and he starts eating, and she's like, that's dog food, and he's like, oh, not bad. Like, that was actually, I think, a well-read, well-timed line. It was actually pretty funny and kind of charming. And I think, you know, there is a lot of range to him, and we definitely see it showcased in this movie. Also, if people are interested in Chris Reeve in comedy roles, I highly highly suggest the movie Noises Off, which is an ensemble play with John Ritter, Michael Caine, a ton of actors and comedic actors in there, and it's very, very funny. So I do recommend that if you want to see more range of Chris Reeves' abilities.
Always.
It's really great. I'm probably gonna have to rewatch it now because I love it so much. And so, yeah, but, you know, get into that kryptonite part, right? Quick stuff to yada yada over, because as all that's happening, this is where we get, like, Gus shows up in Smallville. He tricks Brad through alcohol because Brad is the worst.
He's a douche. He creates, like, the tornado with his computer magic.
Which, exactly, right? Like, let's consider all that. Like, we talked about the crosswalk symbols, like, fighting each other, which is some, like, again, magic, not computers. And he creates a hurricane in Colombia, which is, again, magic. Like, a computer can't do that, but Mixie can.
Yes.
Mixie can absolutely do that.
Yeah, and no, I'm convinced. He's Mr. Mixoplex.
Yeah, same thing as we're describing this, right? Like, they're like, we did it, and we're at this, like, interesting rooftop cabin in Metropolis that the Websters have made, where it's on their roof, they've created a, like, ski slope and have, like, a nice little cabin for themselves, which is apparently a real thing in New York, by the way. People have built cabins on skyscrapers that you can just, like, chill out in.
I hate it. Which is wild.
Yes. And this is the scene where we get him that you mentioned, right, in the ski slopes, because Superman, he's describing how Superman showed up and ruined their plans because he dried all the crops with his heat vision somehow. Their plot failed because of Superman, so they need to get rid of him. But this is also where he goes, Richard Pryor, in, like, a pink, like, reddish pink tablecloth that I did think was funny, where he tried to pull it and it failed miserably and all the silverware fell off the table.
Yes.
Skis down the slope and off a building.
In his dress shoes. He's able to, like, fit his dress shoes into the skis, which are not how skis work.
No.
Even I know this. Not at all.
Yes. Even me. Yeah, I've only been skiing once because I didn't want to do it, but I love my fiance, so I did.
Even Kevin knows this. Kevin and I both know you cannot, one does not simply walk into a set of skis.
But once again, and one does not survive a fall off a building in skis.
I kept thinking that Superman was going to save him. He flies, he goes down the slope. He accidentally goes down the slope because he's, like, turning around to, like, make a point to boss Ross. And he flies off the building. He's falling. He's free falling down the side of the skyscraper.
He's sky falling, if you will.
I keep waiting for Christopher Reeve to show up. And then his fall is lightly broken by, like, a little, like, canopy. And then, like, he just, like, slides down a little bit more and lands on 2 feet on the ground. And he's fine.
This was the moment that, to me, was definitive proof. This is Mixie.
Yeah, this is him. Yeah. Gus Gorman, if you want to call him that, is actually Superman's magical genius nemesis, Mr. Mitzelblick. I'm fully on board with the theory. I don't think that there is much room for interpretation, to be honest with you. It's either like just the movie completely lacks any semblance of reality, or this is a magic man, and I choose to believe in magic.
Yes. Well, we have to believe a man could fly. So, which they do a callback later where Gus says, "I don't believe a man could fly." But anyway, this is where we get to the good part, though, right? They decide that they need kryptonite. They don't have any, so they artificially make kryptonite. There's a composite part that's unknown, so Gus replaces it with tar, and it creates this other kryptonite that they give to Superman during that Smallville celebration of Little Ricky's birthday. Good for Little Ricky.
Good Little Ricky. He gets the
town celebration.
He gets feeded by the town. Now, is this just for Little Ricky, or does everybody who ever has a birthday in Smallville get a local town birthday party?
I mean, it's just for Little Ricky. I think they only did it because Ricky told his friend Superman was going to show up for his birthday. And then when Superman was actually going to show up, the rest of the town was like, well, this is no longer Ricky's birthday. This is for the town.
Yeah.
You sit up on the stage, Ricky, and you get no cake. You get nothing.
Correct.
You just sit there and bring a Superman.
Yes.
But this is where also, like, you could see, like, a lot of what they wanted for Richard Pryor was to do his various shticks, right? Because, like, there is the general voice he does. Like, that character is something he's done on stage before. So he gets to show up and perform one of his, like, famous characters in Smallville to present the kryptonite. It's a nonsense scene about plastics and everything else, but Richard Pryor does his stand-up, basically, and gives him the kryptonite they make, which is still green. So, fun fact, And again, this is a lot of possible conjecture, but from the rumors mills, apparently this was originally supposed to be red kryptonite. They weren't able to make the green kryptonite. They obviously had to sub in, and the kryptonite was supposed to turn out red. And red kryptonite is a variation of kryptonite that does have an effect on Superman. It has varied over the years, but mainly during the Silver Age. Essentially, each piece of red kryptonite causes like wild and crazy different effects on Superman. So like one of them caused his hair to grow really long. One of them turned him into like a giant ant-headed creature. One time he did, in fact, become evil. And this is like one of those things where the idea of removing Superman's inhibitions becomes a key part of modern day red kryptonite. This you see in Smallville, the TV series, quite often is what it does in red kryptonite. So, that is precedent there, but essentially they thought it would be too weird to introduce red kryptonite. That wouldn't make a lot of sense. I don't know if audiences would accept that. They'd accept a lot of other stuff apparently, but they won't accept that. So they
Superman holds on to this thing, and he looks very uncomfortable when Richard Pryor shows up as like a fake military guy and gives this to Superman. And Superman's like, and he's got it. He's like, oh, God, I know what this is, but I'm not going to make a big deal out of it, because if I do, then everyone's going to know that kryptonite's not my thing, even though apparently he did just say it to Lois, which is like, why did you put that out there? Why did you let everyone know your one weakness? Superman, gosh. Anyway, so he's like, oh, I mean, I guess I'm not dying, so perhaps this just looks like kryptonite. I guess I have seen a green crystal previously that wasn't the same thing. But the longer he holds on to it, the more of a terrible, abusive, like horrific human being he becomes. And I just didn't know how this happened. I knew it happened, but I had no idea how it happened. And the fact that it was just like this like fake ass kryptonite turns him into a total butthead was a delightful surprise this morning as I watched the film.
Yeah, and like I think if they had gone the red kryptonite route, it would have, I think, worked a little bit. I think it would have been fine, and it would have been like a direct nod to like something from the comics that causes things like this to happen. But that said, look, nitpicking the color of the kryptonite aside, right? This is where this movie goes from like ridiculous to just incredible. Because as you mentioned, this is the evil Superman. This is Chris Reeve really leaning into this, and it works so well. It's so dumb. His costume gets darker the longer he's evil. His hair gets more disheveled. Like, it's so weird. It starts off with him, like, with Lana and being really creepy with her and, like, not wanting to go save people because I always get there in time. And then he does it. And from there, he spirals. He spirals so much. He fixes the Leaning Tower of Pisa. He blows out the Olympic torch in a hilarious moment. Like, the way he does it off in the corner and to, like, pretends to, like, whoosh, like, you know, sneeze and then just, like, stretches afterwards, like, well, whatever. Like, it's so insane, Josh.
Oh my God.
It's insane.
He loses it. It happens quick. The switch is flipped. And then he's just like in it, with Lana Lang. And then she's like, don't you have to go and get this? Like, it can wait. It can wait.
Yeah. It can wait.
Look at your eyes. We'll be here with you. They're so beautiful. And then she's like, no, seriously, I think you should go. He's like, oh, you're right. And then he goes, and then the movie like forces us to watch as a truck careens off a cliff because Superman didn't get there on time. And when Superman shows up, he's like, what can I do to help? And they're like, you can't do anything. These people are gone.
Yeah, this is all on you, Superman.
And Superman is now responsible for death.
Yeah. And again, spirals him into absurdity, but spirals him. And part of me is like, this is another moment where, like, how he's acting is very Bizarro-esque. Like, to me, the fixing the Leaning Tower is something Bizarro would do.
I love him fixing the Leaning Tower. It's so funny. He goes, he props up the Leaning Tower just to, like, be a jerk, just to, like, because you see, like, this poor vendor who's, like, trying to sell his, like, Leaning Towers of Pisa. And, like,
he ruins that man's life in this movie, by the way.
He ruins his life. That man is bankrupt. This is, again, even by the end of the film, he's doing something like in the diner scene where he's just like ruining the diner to get back at somebody. He fixes a personal mistake, but takes into no account the way in which it impacted another human's livelihood. Superman might be a bad guy.
I mean, it's true Super Dickery, which is a website highlighting all the Silver Age dickery that he does. So yeah. Really, again, it's canonical. Very, very Silver Age film. It's so crazy between that and the Olympic stuff and like then
he blows out there's an Olympic runner, like he's been, the torch has been lit for all, this time, and it's about to go to its final place, and Superman's just hanging out on the sidelines, literally waiting for the last possible second to blow out the torch. And the poor runner just like kind of looks up at Superman. Superman's like, what are you going to do about it? And he flies off. And this poor guy is left holding the bag. And he looks so pathetic. And Superman's like, you're so terrible. How are you going to, like, it's no wonder, Kevin, that this movie comes out in 83 and the next one doesn't come out until 87. Superman needed 4 years of rehabilitation. This movie kills Superman's reputation.
It's not great. It's not great. And this is where we get the stuff you're also talking about, right? Like, he goes and sleeps with Lorelei, which, Jesus. And then you have the infamous moment, you know. While all this is going on, Gus has come up with, again, designs somehow for a supercomputer. Yeah, I don't know how he has these designs. He just came up with them.
He says this to Ross. He's like, you never give me what I want. All I'm doing is doing stuff for you. And Ross is like, well, I could throw you in jail. He's like, well, what do you think I could do to you? He's like, that's an interesting point. So what do you want? He's like, I want a supercomputer. I've got a great idea. It's incredible. No one has ever seen the likes of which I would design this supercomputer. I'd basically create Mother Brain from Metroid. And so, like, that's what they end up doing. They create this gigantic, like metallic broccoli giant of supercomputer, and they just like load it up in a cave, and it has the ability to like, it's like a child drawing like his imagination on a piece of construction paper with a crayon and some marker, and it's like highly it's like highly indecipherable. It's just like
extremely so.
Like you would not be able to, and then like he like put it through like a machine, and then there it is. Like that's basically what happened. Like,
by magic.
Yeah, it's like if someone, it's like a 4-year-old's like, this is the Spaceship Enterprise, this is the Starship, this is where my friends are gonna live, this is where all the bad guys get shot, like, you know, has like all the ideas, except it's Richard Pryor as a man, and it gets built.
Yeah, they somehow accomplish this off of those nonsense notes he made, off of various scraps of papers, like you said, like that child's drawing, and again, because he is Mixtius Pitlick, he's able to do that.
And you
I
have
think.
To believe that he is, or you have to believe a different thing. And then this different thing you have to believe in is very upsetting to consider. The different thing is, so either he is Superman's magical nemesis, Mr. Mitzelplex, Metroplex,
just say Mixie.
or it took years to build this supercomputer. It took like years of people's lives to build the supercomputer. And if it took that long, then Superman is wreaking havoc on the world for years. And also Lois Lane is in Bermuda for that entire
time. For years. Just for years.
So like, that's a lot to take in. And I don't want to live in that world. I'd rather live in the world where Richard Pryor is magic and is just like fooling everybody around him and is able to magically assemble this supercomputer.
Yeah, and there is a third, which we'll get to. I'll save that for the end. But yeah, it's such nonsense. And like, it clearly doesn't take years because, you know, Superman's in a bar drinking, which is a phenomenal scene. He's drinking and flicking, mixed nuts into bottles and smashing them. Then he heat visions his own reflection.
Yeah.
Again, his suit is all dark, his hair is disheveled, and he stumbles out to coincidentally run into Lana and Ricky, who is the same age. Hasn't been years.
Unless he's in cryostasis. You hear onlookers. You hear, like, he fell on the rock, and it regressed his, it stunted his growth. Poor little Ricky. Sweet Ricky. You hear onlookers as Superman is in this bar, getting crunk and flicking nuts at these bottles. He's like, Superman's getting drunk. You hear them say that from outside. And go, Superman's in there, he's getting drunk. Is what they said. The damage that he's done to his reputation. So it is interesting. We've been talking about this along the way that, you think about Superman. It's like, well, he's invincible. You can't take him down. Well, there's kryptonite, of course. And everyone's like, that's the only thing. But there's also magic, which we've discussed. And there's also just like general, like trickery and intelligence. Like you can outsmart him. But in this movie, they also show that, alcoholism is a weakness. Yes. And just like self-destruction.
The most human weakness of all of his alcoholism.
You know, by the end of this movie, he is going to have to go, like, he will require significant image rehab and probably literal rehab by the end of the film.
Well, he has his moment, though, right? He has his version of rehab. He goes to essentially self-therapy. And I will say, this scene, I think, is actually, like, a legit scene. It's the one, I think, legit good scene in this movie. Is after running into Ricky, who's just like, you have to be good, Superman! We need you, Superman! Superman! He flies into this junkyard. The splitting apart of Clark Kent and him doesn't make a lot of sense, again, unless magic. And he fights himself. He fights himself, Clark versus Superman, the two sides of his personality. And it's pretty awesome. Like, this is the scene everyone talks about because it is the one good scene. It's a cool moment to see this conflict between himself, this internal conflict made real. And you have these cool moments of Chris Reeve doing Superman, evil Superman, and, you know, good Superman Clark Kent as they're like smacking each other around. You know, Clark is like throwing tires over on Superman. He's throwing him into acid. I love that back and forth. It's also dark. It's a very different tone here because he throws him into a trash compactor.
So the three, like, this, these movies love to crush their protagonists. Like in the in the first one, Lois is getting like crushed in the car in the earthquake, and now in this one, Superman, like Clark Kent, is getting crushed in the compactor, and it's like brutal. You're like watching their human body like go up against like you know, detritus crushing them, and it's terrifying. And that's the first time that this battle scene makes you think that Clark Kent is gonna die. Is like they're like gooing him together in the trash compactor, and like, you know, that's not actually going to kill him. And so,
although, can you imagine if this is how the movie went? When it's just like, he's just evil now. Superman is just evil. It'd
be amazing. He like, he's able to like free himself from that. And then he goes and fights. He gets back into fighting position, and then evil Superman drops like the gigantic like load of metal on top of him that just like drives him into the ground like whack-a-mole. And you're like, okay, no one would survive that except maybe Superman. And it's crazy that this has happened to Clark Kent twice in a row now. And then he like pushes himself out from it. So you're like, all right, well, dramatically, like from like a dramatic, like rhythmic perspective, like it's about time that he's like, he gets the upper hand now, right? And then no, he gets like doused in acid, right? Like, I think that's what happens to him. Like, he douses bad Superman in acid, and then bad Superman's able to like chuck the acid back at Clark. And then he throws him into like another crushing apparatus. So it's like, yep, the third time Clark Kent has been crushed. And then it requires Clark to somehow, he gets out of that. He doesn't get like, he's going to be like shredded is what's going to happen. He's going to be like shredded to bits. And he's like in the Wonka factory, Kevin. Like, it's like, it's a death trap.
The nightmarish, yeah, the death trap. And the Wonka factory is a death trap, as established.
He's in a death trap, and he's able to get out of the death trap somehow. And all it takes to take down bad Superman is effectively, Kevin, once again, Superman is breaking a neck. Here he is. Clark gets evil Superman in a chokehold and effectively breaks this dude's neck, and then he's Superman again. So that's the death of evil Superman. So don't tell me that Superman breaking General Zod's neck in Man of Steel isn't in keeping with previous canon, because it is.
Well,
yes. Anything.
He disappears into nothingness because it's all, you know, a physical manifestation of an internal struggle. So he doesn't actually kill.
That's,
you know,
one man's interpretation, Kevin. Now, I'm old enough to remember last week when we watched Superman 2, and there were multiple Supermans at one point in time fighting multiple Kryptonians. I believe, in fact, there were four different Supermans at one moment in time. So again, canonically speaking, Kevin, Superman can clone himself.
This is true.
So, you know, with that being said, it would appear that one Superman clone conquers the other, and who's the clone and who's the original?
Now we're getting into Invincible territory. Mm-hmm, again.
That's right.
It's okay, yes, but I mean, come on. The scene is great because to me also, this is like what you're saying about Clark not getting the upper hand and this evil Superman beating him down. It's a battle of wills. It's a battle of, you know, perseverance. And again, as I mentioned, this to me is Superman's big thing, is that the true heart of Superman is that Captain America, I can do this all day. And like, he gets knocked down over and over again by this evil Superman, and he still comes back. He still keeps breaking through. He still keeps pushing on, because where this other Superman is being worn down, where this other Superman is getting tired, which we see, where this other Superman is like getting frustrated and unable to continue, this real Superman, the Clark Kent part of him, the person that is the hero, doesn't stop coming back and getting back up. And that's how he ends up getting the upper hand. And I love that. I love that moment. And I love this scene because to me, it is the one moment in this movie that I'm just like, ah, yes, somebody somewhere understood like the thing about Superman. And I really enjoyed that. And like, it's left a lasting impression. Not just me. I think a lot of people, they always talk about Superman 3 is really terrible. Well, except for the junkyard scene. Obviously, there's other things to enjoy about this movie in a different way, but I think legitimately this is like a good scene, you know?
Yeah. I loved it. I really did. I gotta be honest.
And then, unfortunately, we go right back to insanity, right? We have Superman. This is where we're heading to the climax. He's back to being good Superman. He flies off. He goes, finds out where they're going to be in what I assume is the Grand Canyon. And there's a cave there where they built the supercomputer, as you mentioned earlier, this supercomputer that can automatically learn stuff. As Superman's flying there to go confront them, they clearly lost all their money on their effects budget is gone, because we get this weird ass video game sequence.
I love it. Oh my God. This movie's insane. Yeah. Right? The evil supercomputer, which is unlike anything anyone has ever seen, is in advance of Nintendo, right? Like, Nintendo's not really a thing yet. I don't think we're in Atari at best right now.
I think at best, it may have been come out in Japan in 82,
but
it definitely didn't hit the American market for a while.
Where's Nintendo? Either way, like, this is sophisticated, all things considered. It is. Don't laugh at me. It is.
Superman 3, the reason video games exist.
Yeah.
Did someone see this and was like, how do we do that?
I guess the color TV game, the first video game console from Nintendo, was originally 1977. And then the Nintendo Entertainment System is 85. So this is pre-NES.
This isn't even close to what NES is, right?
83 in Japan, though. You're right.
Yeah. So, like, clearly it just hit big in Japan, and they're just like, how do we include this sequence? But Nintendo had nothing close to these types of graphics.
No. Nothing.
And it's crazy. They're just shooting missiles at him. He's dodging. There's points for whatever reason. And it's insane. Again, the annoyance of these bad guys. Good God. Gus is, of course, upset about this. And I do like, this is where, for a while, we've seen Gus being like, I don't want to kill Superman. I don't want anything to do with that. That's not my deal. And Superman comes in. The computer starts trying to attack him. It somehow creates a bubble out of nothing. Because, again, magic. Magic computer creates a bubble that's trying to suffocate Superman. And he's able to get out of that. And then it creates Kryptonite Ray. Because it's able to do anything. And this is where Gus goes in. He unscrews that piece. There's that moment where he wrestles with Ross.
How could you forget? He's a very important character.
Yeah, Boss super Ross. Important. I've seen this movie so many times, and this shows you how little I care about these villains.
I've seen it once, Kevin, and it's beautiful.
it's beautifully ridiculous. He swallows the screw with the one screw, just like an exhaust pipe, the one exhaust pipe that'll take down the machine. But the machine comes alive. It comes to life, powered on its own, and attacks Superman. Huge, you know, this battle ensues. It starts electrocuting him. Superman has to fly away. He leaves, leaving them to themselves, because it seems like he can't beat the supercomputer. And this is where we get Chekhov's vat of acid.
Yes, it comes back.
But before that,
we
have to talk about a moment.
They give this to Vera, who is Boss Bubba Ross. It's his sister, I believe.
Yes, correct.
Who is also a computer genius, we find out.
Which is insane, because if she was, then what were they doing the whole time? Why did you have Gus? Like, that made no sense to me.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense when you realize he's a wizard, literally.
That's true.
And can do things that she cannot, and she's probably uber frustrated. It's like, this isn't supposed to work. Well, you've been gaslit, lady. Like, this was... This is a magic man who's been using the powers of Mr. Mitzelplick to pull the wool over. And so she gets, like, sucked in, like, a horror scene.
Horror scene.
Is, like, what's that movie? The Machine? Is it The Machine is the horror movie? The one that's,
I mean, there is a movie called The Machine, yes.
Is that the one, like, in the factory where it, like, eats people?
The Mangler.
The Mangler.
Yes.
That's, like, what happens here. She gets, like, sucked into the supercomputer. The supercomputer, like... grabs her, pulls her in. It is like some Cronenberg shit.
It is. It digitizes her in a weird way. This scene, I mean, we talk about the junkyard scene leaving last thing. I have never forgotten this moment since I saw this as a kid, because it was nightmarish. It was nightmarish to see this. Like, it freaked me out so bad. It gave me, like, it definitely scarred me in some way, because, like, I've never forgotten that moment of seeing the pieces come on her and everything and her,
It's terrible.
It is. It's horrifying. And, like, she comes out, she starts blasting everyone, you know, taking care of Lorelai. It's complete pandemonium. And that's when Superman comes back. And again, I do like this, because it's about Superman using intelligence to beat this machine. And they introduced this plot point earlier. So he shows up with something behind his back, and the machine analyzes it, and is just like, it's nothing. And so it starts attacking Superman, drags him toward, it's moving on its own as well. With electricity and, like, pieces just kind of moving around completely on its own, pushes him into that area, and then the acid heats up, Superman takes off the lid, and the acid basically destroys the computer, eats through a computer, and destroys it. And that's how Superman saves the day here, right? And then he's able to get Gus, and they fly off together. And again, I do like that he outsmarted the computer, right? And he even explains to Gus, like, if you walk in without a threat, the computer is not going to feel, not do anything about it, because it doesn't see it as a threat. And I think that's smart. I think he was able to, like, think his way through.
Yeah. He is able to do, I'm telling you, I think Superman may secretly be a genius.
I mean, I'm not going to hate it.
In Superman 3, like, I think it's possible that he is actually, like, hyper intelligent.
It's a Silver Age version. It is a very Silver Age movie, which actually brings me into the thing I wanted to reference, the other possible explanation. Because we knew, you said it earlier, at one point, Mixie would have been the villain, but there was another villain that they were thinking
Brainiac.
About using.
And Brainiac. Can, just to establish, because I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to this are huge into Superman, but maybe aren't, and, you know, this is, you know, some first exposure stuff for them. Just the quick 411 on Brainiac, who is, short of Luthor and Zod, probably Superman's, like, number one villain.
Correct. So Brainiac, there's been a couple different versions. One of the most oldest versions is that he is a super intelligent alien that collects other races to analyze and keep and preserve. But he's essentially like a super genius, technologically advanced individual from an alien race. That has shifted and changed throughout time. And by this point in time, there is a essentially supercomputer. Brainiac is a supercomputer that is able to be itself aware, and it collects stuff on its own, because it's the cold alienness of technology and of aliens in general, right? The big fear of that.
Yeah.
And so he's an artificially intelligent evil computer, basically, is what Brainiac is, which sounds a lot.
That's what Vera is.
Like
Vera,
what we're
Vera,
looking at.
Vera becomes Brainiac.
Right, because Brainiac, the one argument is that
unless
Brainiac
you would say
is
the supercomputer itself is Brainiac. And
I think that's the thing.
Yes, yeah.
The supercomputer itself is Brainiac, but we've seen Brainiac as an individual, because it creates, Brainiac does create for himself, like, you know, bipedal forms that it can move around in, which would have been Vera. So, like, there's pieces here that is very much Brainiac. And if you go and want to say, like, okay, well, Gus doesn't know technology, right? Like, how does he know this? I don't know. There's been instances in the comics and even in the animated series during Justice League where Brainiac has essentially infected, like, Lex Luthor or other individuals and, like, essentially given them this information to make them do this stuff and build him a body, build him a power source without them knowing. So the idea that like Brainiac has been subtly influencing Gus, he's been the one who's been doing all this stuff. He's been the one who inserted this, these plans and the schematics for the supercomputer into Gus's mind to come to life. Definitely tracks. It makes sense.
Yep.
And it does be, it's Brainiac is a Superman villain, but I feel like it's another one of those instances as well, where it's just like, ah, people won't know Brainiac. There's too much backstory, yada, yada, yada. He's just supercomputer. He's a supercomputer to fight Superman because we're afraid of computers and technology. And it's, doesn't work like in the end, right? Like it's another one of those like, oh, it's been 30 minutes. Here's the real villain of the piece. But like those theories, it's like, I feel like we're in those like holes, right? The wormhole of like, either he's Mixiel Pytlick or Brainiac is involved. Help make this movie slightly more coherent. But take it away from that.
I think it's somewhere in the middle where it's like, this is a really fun way to lens the movie. But also the better way to lens the movie would be if this was actually what it was. You know what I mean? Like we're kind of like in like shitty Goldilocks territory. what I mean by that is like, this is too hot. This is too cold. This is just fine.
Yeah. This will do.
This is just right. You know,
I won't starve, so I'll eat it.
You know, this is just fine.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, that's basically heading us into the end of the film, right? Like, we talked about the scene earlier where Superman's flying Gus away because Gus ends up helping him and shows that he's not truly just a terrible person. And Superman wants to make a pit stop in nowhere that we can tell. He stops at a coal mine, and he crushes a piece of coal into a diamond. A giant diamond that he eventually gives to Lana Lang. And we have this moment too where he's just like, well, if you have computers here, you should give this man a job. And then Gus is like, I'm fine, I don't need to fly, I'll walk, I'll see y'all later. And Superman flies away. And the idea of Superman being like, hey, you should give this guy a job, into a place that Gus has no idea where he is, no way, no idea how to get anywhere, and just on his recommendation, give this man a job, is wild in and of itself.
Yeah, so like, This is another argument in favor of Mr. Mitzelplick, though, because his magic, it would be influential on Superman, where he could, Superman is susceptible to magic. That is a thing. So if this is Mr. Mitzelplick, then he's like, I'm a good guy. I don't deserve the same consequences as these guys. I definitely didn't try to send the tornado after Columbia. I didn't build the supercomputer. It wasn't me. You're a good man, Gus. I agree. Here, have a job. And then, like, when he leaves, Gus just, like, nopes on out of there. He's like, nah, I don't need this. I'll walk the 10 miles. I'll find some way to, like, you know, con some other poor fool on my way to getting to the bus. And so who has the last laugh? I loved that ending for him. But it was hilarious because, like, I was like, so was it just the poster where he's flying him and, like, that they look like buddies? And then it is that part of the movie where he's flying him through the canyon. And I'm like, all right, I may have seen, like, a commercial of this.
I mean, must have been, right? Because it is a scene and, like, it was used for a poster. And it is, like, the moment of, like, comedy of Superman carrying Richard Pryor and flying with Richard Pryor, who was, again, huge at the time. And it is a fun little moment, but I like the interpretation of, like, if he's Mixie, he just outsmarts Superman. And, like, the idea of, like, I'm going to walk 10 miles. No, you're not. You're just going to get away from them and then nope yourself away because, like, you're a fifth-dimensional god, basically.
Yeah.
And that makes total sense. And, like Mixie, he wasn't a bad person. He was just causing a little bit of mischief,
just
right?
Just a tiny bit.
Yeah. And so,
you know, just almost ravaged Columbia with the cyclone. But, yeah. You know, it's just a little bit of mischief.
He knew Superman was going to take care of the problem, or at least test Superman's limit to it. And then the only other scene we really get, right, after this is that we get a fun moment, and I will say, again, I really like the Lana stuff, so we get this moment where Clark delivers the diamond, and then Brad shows up. And I do like this, because this is a contrast to the diner scene. Because in this moment, like in the diner scene from Superman 2, Superman, like the guy punches Superman and he hurts his own hand. I think that's fine. But then Superman puts him on the thing, pushes him across the diner, and then smashes, you know, the pinball machine. In this instance, Brad does everything. He swings at Superman. Superman just moves out of the way. He falls onto the thing and rolls himself out. That I like. That's a very, like, good way to have Superman get the upper hand without doing something like really bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he kind of self-owns this guy.
Right. And I think that's great.
I'm fine with that. I have no issue with what happens to Brad. And also, like, this is such a strength. Like, Brad is a character. Rocky really isn't. Like, Brad is a character in this movie. He has some history, too. We saw him be a jerk to Superman as kids. So, like, some measure of, like, this guy who's just, like, perennially been mean to Clark, kind of, like, trying to go after Clark again and then basically just, like, goobering himself. is satisfying. There's a three movie arc payoff here.
Yeah. Yes. And I like that. And again, like, I think, you know, I'll give credit to this movie where it's due. And this is definitely one of those scenes I like. And we do get a fun little moment ish where, you know, Lana somehow is working for the Daily Planet now. And like she gets an interaction with Lois, who showed up for 30 more seconds. And you have that like hint of the rivalry between them. And in a way, this ending of this movie does set off what could have been an interesting, sequel.
Is Lana in Superman 4 or no?
Spoiler. No.
Yeah.
No one is in Superman 4. From what I remember. So this is going to be a fun watch.
Wait, because, is Lois not in Superman 4?
If I'm not mistaken, no.
Wait a minute. Hang on a second. I refuse to believe that this is true.
It might be one of those instances of the 30 seconds again, but in my head, I think the actress is Mariel Hemingway is the main actress who when I was a kid, I thought that was just Lana again, but no.
I'm about to get very upset. Hang on. I need to just like, all right, so I'm scrolling over Superman 4, Quest for Peace. No, Margot Kidder's in it. At the very least, she's in it. How in it, I don't know, but she is going to be in the movie at least.
Then it must be like in the same way, like I have forgotten it because I remembered Lois at the beginning of this movie and I thought like that was a full wrap. I didn't even remember her showing back up at the end of this movie. And again, I've seen this movie a lot.
Yeah.
But in the same way for Quest for Peace, it must be a small piece because I do know who the main person is in this movie. And I thought in my head as a kid, it was Lana Lang again, but it's not.
Okay.
But yeah, it's weird and it's wild to do this, especially like a setup for fans who were like excited to possibly see this. Now, there's a lot of behind the scene reasons this all happened, which we'll talk about when we get there. But besides that, and the Leaning Tower scene, which we talked about earlier, where Superman fixes the Leaning Tower and ruined that poor man's life forever, that's a wrap. That's a wrap for Superman 3.
Oh my God. It's terrific. I really loved it. I loved watching it. It was so bad.
I knew it was.
I mean, like, to say it was even so bad, I don't know that that's fully fair. It's ridiculous. It's not okay in many ways. And in some ways it is bad, like outright. And then there are other ways in which it's so campy that I don't know. I think I found myself in the mood for it today. And like I walked into it expecting some measure of camp, but maybe not to the degree that I got it. But I was very pleased. I was very pleased with the level of camp I got. This was enjoyable. It's definitely objectively worse. Clearly, objectively worse than the other
this
two.
This is fair, right? This is where we are. And I think it's okay for us to have this perspective. I've always been like, listen, you can like a bad movie. You just have to acknowledge like it's not good.
It's not good. Like, it's not. But I had so much fun movie. With it. So much
agreed.
Fun.
Like we had a blast watching this again because we can point out the absurdity. We can laugh about stuff. We came up with ridiculous theories to try and explain away certain things. And there are good pieces, right? Again, I retain the acting all the way through is good. I think Annette O'Toole as Lana is phenomenal. She's so good. And I liked the junkyard scene is fantastic. There's a lot of good stuff, but then there's the ridiculous stuff is fun in a like, this is so stupid way, right? Like that opening sequence, like you said, set the tone of like, this is so dumb. I cannot believe this is happening right now. But you're laughing and smiling while watching it. And I think that happens a lot throughout this movie. So we want to acknowledge, you know, we're not crazy people. We're not going to say this is anywhere near good or the level of the first two films. But it was entertaining to visit this film in this context for sure.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right, Kevin, what do we got this week in the way of feedback?
Got a couple of things. Wanted to hit on two notes from listeners who wrote in about Superman 2. We didn't get to hit all the Superman 2 feedback last week, but there's two I want to call out here. The first being from Adam E., giving some interesting information here. Though during your Superman 2 coverage, you discussed how bizarre it was that General Zod and company flew over Mount Rushmore on their way to DC. This brings us to the great joke that's been apparently overlooked. General Zod didn't land in Houston, Texas. They landed in East Houston, Idaho.
Stop
it. The news reporter the scene
no way.
In the small town makes note of this
Stop.
When he arrives and begins reporting.
No, really?
Thus, we get this hilarious idea of aliens landing on Earth, engaging in a miscommunication of some kind, and ending up in East Houston, Idaho, instead of their intended target of Texas.
Unbelievable. How does that happen? Is that real, or is this a joke?
I may have overlooked it because I just didn't register
Houston,
Idaho.
Superman.
The news reporter definitely said a point where it's just like, we're here in, and I guess must have just glazed over for a moment and assumed like, yeah, Houston, Texas. But yeah, Houston, Texas looks nothing like that now that you really think about it, right?
Yeah, no, it's East Houston, Idaho. Yep.
That's incredible.
100%.
That is incredible.
Right over my head, much like Superman. That is actually genius. Very, very funny.
That is genius. And it also, as Adam points out, would explain why they would pass over Mount Rushmore. So, Adam, thank you so much for that. That is
Adam.
That is
bless
a phenomenal,
you. Very good
phenomenal
call
bit
out.
Of trivia.
Very, very good.
Yeah. So ridiculous. Adam E., thank you so much.
Amazing, incredible.
This is from Jeff E. It's a bit of a longer one, but I wanted to read through it because it's got some really great stuff.
Cool.
Thanks again for the podcast, and thank you for listening. I would say one tidbit I wanted to add that I recall from my original Donner Cut deep dive after it came out. In the Fortress of Solitude sequence, it's worth noting that the order in which Superman A gives up his powers and B sleeps with Lois is different between the two versions. In the theatrical, he gives up his powers first, while in the Donner Cut, it is afterwards. And it features a memorable moment where Jor-El glares at Lois, who has just walked out wearing only a blue Superman shirt and knee socks. The timing of this helps reinforce the tone of their conversation. That Kal-El is weary of his responsibility as Earth's savior and maybe just wants to be able to live like regular humans. The order and theatrical version, on the other hand, presents it more as a love-struck Superman kind of flippantly giving up his powers so he can go score. While I never picked up on that subtlety here as a kid, it was definitely one of the several moments where it seems something was totally off about Superman's actions, as you guys discussed quite excellently. And there's more, but that is a phenomenal, phenomenal note there for Superman 2. I think that's great. I actually hadn't really put that together, the subtlety of it, but you are absolutely correct.
That's genius. Just another way in which that seems like the superior cut. And if I'd had any doubt, then I watched what Richard Lester does when left to his own devices here in Superman 3.
Right? Which, speaking of Superman 3, Jeff goes on to talk about that. So it's such a mess of a movie, but it's kind of a guilty pleasure for me and has a few really fun scenes. Kevin and I were reveling in the brilliance of Reeves acting in the junkyard scene, and really that whole descent into depression from a bad kryptonite trip is thoroughly entertaining. I always found the straightening of the Leaning Tower a bit to be hilarious, probably much more so than it deserved. I also loved the cartoonish properties of the Deus Ex Acid. which is introduced in that great chemical plant scene involving a flying frozen lake that I'm pretty sure defies several laws of physics. There's a lot of criticism of Richard Pryor's involvement in the movie, but I've always enjoyed it. If nothing else, he fits in with the wacky tone of the rest of the movie, and obviously his ingenious computer hacking theft of fractional cents is forever immortalized.
Forever, obviously. Destroy the machines. Michael Bolton, forever.
Yes.
I don't think I have nothing negative to say about Richard Pryor being in this movie. None.
Yeah,
nothing.
Same here. And really, that feedback of the guilty pleasure came from a few people, because we also have, you know, these are from the Discord, but Homer J saying, like, the way the ring is created is so stupid, and yet I like it, kind of sums up most of the movie.
Yeah, then he just, like, grabs the lump of coal, turns it into a diamond, and brings it to Lana.
Yeah, just crushes into a diamond.
Yeah, brilliant.
Same Emily Reed says, yeah, it was ridiculous, just like the rest of the film. I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
And then a few more things to hit on, two more pieces of feedback from Jeffrey K. Not much to say about this one. I hadn't seen Superman 3 in years, and I was hoping I liked it better this time. Nope. Superman 2 is the movie I feared that the original Superman would be in 1978.
I think he means Superman 3, because he had that feedback about
Superman. Superman 3, sorry.
Yeah, for sure.
One question for you guys to discuss. There have been several takes on Superman returning to Smallville, including the current excellent Superman and Lois series. Do you think Superman is more suited to Smallville stories versus Metropolis? I'm curious to hear your take
really
on this,
interesting.
Josh.
I mean, really, it's you who will be able to give a better informed answer to this. But I'm in the middle of watching Superman and Lois now. Like, it's very fresh for me. I guess there's one episode that I have not seen yet, which is this past week's. But otherwise, I'm up to date. I'm just behind by one. And it's set in Smallville by and large. And I like that. I like that setting. Do you think it's ridiculous? I'm getting into a little bit of spoiler territory. But like, Lois, like, you know, there's medium, you know?
There's other places you could do
there's
your
other
job.
Platforms. I don't know. Anyway, but I like the Smallville setting. I do love that side of Clark. I like, you know, small town Clark, I think is a fun character. But there's a lot of Metropolis stories that I enjoy as well. But I think, I don't know, because I think we are so used to big city superheroes, and Gotham City is certainly much more iconic. There isn't, at least as far as I know, there isn't really like a Smallville equivalent for Batman.
No.
You know, Batman is Gotham is Batman. And I don't think of Superman as Metropolis as Superman in the way that I do think. If you're asking me which is better suited, I don't know what the answer is, but if you're asking me which one to name as the location most associated with Superman, if Krypton's not an answer, an available answer, then I would say Smallville. And probably in no small part due to the fact that they created an entire TV show about it that lasted for, what, 10 years?
Yes, 10 seasons.
Yeah.
So my answer is, I don't want to say it's a cop-out, but to me, the answer is both, because both are a quintessential part of the character. I think Superman's past in Smallville informs a lot of who he is, and I think his life in Metropolis is informed by that, but also shaped a lot of who he ends up becoming. And I think that's true to a lot of us, right? Like, especially like leaving your hometown, going into a big city, then returning to your hometown every now and then. I think they're all really important ways to showcase the character of Superman. Everyone talks about Superman's boring, right? Because he has all these powers and like what can beat him? He's boring. If you just look at that part of it, if you just look at that part of the character, the superhero doing superhero things, it can maybe get boring, because especially if you're not into action, if it's just Superman punching stuff, it's not going to be entertaining. When you get into the character of Superman, there's so much there to mine. There's so much to delve into. And I think that's where you get the type of stories where when you focus on the contrast of Smallville or Metropolis, or you focus on the human beats of the character, the things that are relatable. I believe Grant Morrison said this, is that, you know, he has a version of Superman that's a bit more extreme in terms of stuff, but he looks at Superman as just like, Superman is just like us. He just does things on a much, much greater scale.
Yeah.
He has a dog just like us. He just takes him for walks into the sky and hangs out on the moon. He plays fetches with trees. You know, That's Superman. He does these things despite his extraordinary powers that we can relate to. For Grant, he does a lot of the Silver Age stuff, the extreme stuff like that, right? Like Superman moving planets and things like that. And it's phenomenal. It's really, really well done because he grounds it in those relatable human beats. And I think that's what you get when you focus in on these Smallville stories, when you focus in on Metropolis stories. I think you need both because they show the various parts of the character. They inform this character in really great ways. So hopefully that's not a cop-out answer, not picking one or the other, because I do think both are equally important.
No, I think it's an informed answer. You know, this is why people are here. You know, they want to hear what you have to think. They're tell us a wise one.
Oh, God, don't call me that.
Yeah.
As I reveal my true form of Mixius Pitlick. Yes. I'm not wise, I'm just an imp.
Yeah. You're definitely the Mr. Mitzelplick of this podcast pair.
I'm little Ricky.
I hit my head on a rock a long time ago.
I love it.
And I stayed in a regressed state for the rest of my life.
I just want to read one last piece of feedback here from James S., aka Jimmy, not Olsen. My first memory of seeing a Superman movie in theater was when I was 5 years old. To this day, seeing Vera get overtaken by the supercomputer and turned into a cyborg still creeps me out. It's very Sam Raimi horror in its style.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Like, I'm here with you.
Yeah, it feels like that. That's what I'm saying. It was vintage 80s horror movie stuff.
Yeah.
Like, the only thing, Kevin, that was missing was, like, the gore.
Yeah.
But even, like, when you see the acid melting, the effects on that, like, remind you of, like, I said Cronenberg before, but, like, gosh, what's that Cronenberg movie where the people's heads explode?
Scanners,
yeah. And like the culmination of that movie where like the guy like gets set on fire and like, you know, like his eyeballs pop off and it's like so cheesy, but it's like very 80s and so like very visceral and just like, ew, gross. Like the way the acid is bubbling and like the red goo and the ooze is extraordinarily evocative of like the nastiest stuff from 80s horror. So that whole sequence to me was very jarring in contrast to the rest of the movie. But then I thought about it for like another half second. I was like, this is so tonally consistent with everything I'm watching in this movie. This is one of the weirdest superhero movies I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, and I can't wait till we go into Superman 4.
Yeah, but I'm not going to have the
different experience.
I'm not going to have the same exact reaction as we're wrapping Superman 3 here and starting to look ahead towards our final Christopher Reeve Superman film. Because I don't remember beat for beat Quest for Peace, but I suspect that this is the one that I've seen the most. Because it was 87, so yes. I'm 2 years old when this movie comes out. It's on TV a lot, or we have it on VHS. I'm not sure which, but like Nuclear Man is seared into my brain. That fight on the moon, being buried in the moon, no pain, no gain. You know, like there are things from Quest for Peace that are like, frankly, I think like foundational for my understanding of Superman as a character. So like I'm going to have nostalgia for this one. It might be trash. It likely is trash. But it's like going to be like my trash, I think, or I'm going to be like really sad and disappointed next week, which is a possibility. But I have not revisited this since I was a young lad. I haven't revisited any of these movies since I was very, very young, as we're discovering here, or I've never seen them at all, as was the case this week. But this one I have seen, I just haven't seen it in literal decades. So it's going to be fascinating to go back with like my current lens and see if I can see what I saw back then, or if I'm just going to be like fully jaded and disappointed. And I wonder, Kevin, if there will be anything added here in that, like, this is the last Christopher Reeve Superman movie. There are no other Christopher Reeve Superman movies. This is capping out what has been, I don't want to speak for both of us, but I think that I can, like a special, like everything, a super mini series for us. This has been supremely fun.
I loved it, obviously, to
go and do, that I expect that even if the movie is not good, like, I, at the very least, I think like some Superman 3 levels of reverence, then at least like, enjoyment. That's my expectation. I don't know what it's going to be, but I went into Superman 3 with like a really low bar, and probably problematically, I'm going into Superman 4 with actually like a relatively high bar personally. if that makes sense, if that tracks.
It does. And like, I think for me in a similar way, I remember as a kid really liking Superman 4 because of the Nuclear Man stuff. And like, there's a little bit more action. But like, I have watched it since. But like, I remember not being a fan when I watched it again, you know, a few times, but it has been a while on that one specifically. While I watched it a few times as a kid, as an adult, I've probably seen it the least. And it's going to be one of those things where I'm just like, I'm almost 100% sure that Lana's not in this movie. And I was in my head, I'm like, Lois isn't in this movie, right? It's the Mariel Hemingway character. And now I'm going to go into it. And I'm just watch like Lois is going to be the entire movie. I'm going to be like, okay, I guess she was. Cause there are things I vividly remember. Like you said, the moon sequence for sure. How it ends, I definitely remember cause it's insane. And there's like all these other bits and pieces I remember from this movie, but like clearly my memory of it isn't as solidified as it has been for the three films that we have watched, because I knew a lot about the beats for beats for one and two of 100% and for three as well. So I think this is gonna be an interesting experience for both of us to come into this podcast and an interesting way to end it, because there's also a lot of backstory about how this movie got made that is very different again from the previous three.
All right,
always a story on these always movies about the BTS.
Always a story. We will get into it. Superman 4, Quest for Peace is going to wrap up our Superman coverage, at least of the Christopher Reeve era, and certainly for now. Get your feedback in super@postshowrecaps.com. If you just have general Superman things you want to get off your chest, now is the time to do it before we start transitioning into that trickster god, that little... speaking of mischief, speaking of which, the Loki show, which I'm just always going to call it the Loki show... The Loki show is on its way. Disney Plus's Loki coming your way on June 9th. That preview podcast is coming your way on June 4th. And we will have coverage coming out on Fridays from that point forward. So if you've got questions about that and you want to get them in early, super@postshowrecaps.com. Or, of course, you can talk to Kevin and I on Twitter @RandHoward. That's me, @KevMahadeo. That's Kevin. You can also talk to us in the Discord if you are a member of the Post Show Recaps patron Discord. That's at the $10 level. Make some friends. Have fun in our great community where we're talking about all things superheroic and plenty more. Playing games, talking snacks, having the best time with some of the best people on the internet. You can sign up patreon.com/postshowrecaps. If the $10 is a little too steep for you, then that $5 is going to get you an exclusive patron podcast feed where there are tons of bonus shows, including the aforementioned Mighty Ducks coverage that Kevin is leading, the 24 podcast preview that's already out, the Everything is Super One Shot Invincible that Kevin and I did a few weeks ago. That's still available. Really fun conversation. I also did an AMA, Kevin. I did like a what I would call it an AWA, Ask Wiggler Anything. I put out the call for questions. I answered them on a podcast. I just word vomited into a microphone as I'm wont to do with no one to stop me this time. It was great. That podcast is available. I think we're going to do that with some regularity. It was really fun to do, very interactive, fueled by your questions, the patrons of Post Show Recaps. You want that direct line to me? Well, first of all, we should talk that through. Like, why? Secondly, it's available. You can do that. We can make it happen. It's really fun stuff. So consider signing up, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Kevin, anything else?
That's it for me. I'm going to walk 10 miles to a bus station. And
just in a slump, Kevin. You're just in a slump. You're just in a slump, Kevin. You're going to get out of it.
You're going to get out of there, Superman.
You're going to get out of there, Kevin.
I wonder what that kid's up to. Anyway.
Oh, poor little Ricky. Oh, my God. All right. We're going to fly off, up, up, and away. We'll be back next week with our final Superman Christopher Reeve podcast, Superman 4 Quest for Peace, on its way next week. Until then, everybody, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper?
a woo-hoo-er, a hand clapper, a high-fiver. I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.